طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal occupation and colonization of their homeland. The purpose of This Week in Palestine is to feature the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the American mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Fahm, and we continue it in his memory. This is John Roberts. It has been another horrendous week in Palestine as Israel continues its bombardment of Gaza. We've heard news reports of the relentless bombing of Gaza and the retaliation of Hamas as framed by the American media. What is behind this military assault? Here is an Al Jazeera news report that frames the issue from an Arab point of view.
On May 10, Israeli armed forces stormed Al-Aqsa Mosque in the Haram al-Sharif in Jerusalem, Islam's third holiest site, ahead of a march by Zionist nationalists commemorating Israel's capture of the eastern half of the city in 1967. More than 300 Palestinians were injured in the raid. In retaliation, Hamas, the Islamist militant group that runs Gaza, have fired over 1,000 rockets into Israel so far. This has killed 8 people in Israel till now, including an Indian woman working as a maid. The Israelis have launched several airstrikes on Gaza in response, killing over 130 Palestinians, including 9 children so far. The ongoing violence in Jerusalem is a culmination of tensions building up since the start of Ramzan in mid-April, when Israeli police set up barricades at the Damascus Gate, a main entrance to the occupied Old City, preventing Palestinians from gathering there. It led to clashes. The threatened eviction of dozens of Palestinian families in the East Jerusalem neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah escalated the crisis further in the last week of Ramzan. Clashes erupted on the night of May 7 in Jerusalem between Palestinian protesters and Israeli police, in which hundreds of Palestinians and over a dozen Israeli police personnel were injured. The Israeli authorities had given permission for the Jerusalem Day March, traditionally taken out by far-right Zionists through the Arab quarter of the Old City. Ahead of the march on May 10, which was rerouted given the tensions, Israeli armed forces stormed Al-Aqsa Mosque with rubber bullets, stun grenades and tear gas to evict Palestinians who Israel said had camped there with stones and Molotov cocktails. Hamas issued an ultimatum to the Israeli troops to stand down from Al-Aqsa. By evening, they launched rockets and Israeli strikes followed. A Jewish settlement agency has issued eviction notices to Palestinian families in Sheikh Jarrah, claiming that their houses sit on land purchased by Jewish agencies in the late 19th century, when historic Palestine was a part of the Ottoman Empire. Arab families have been living in Sheikh Jarrah for generations after 28 Palestinian families first moved there during the creation of the State of Israel in historical Palestine in 1948, when hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were forced out of their homes. In 1956, when East Jerusalem was ruled by Jordan, houses were constructed for these families in Sheikh Jarrah. But Israel captured East Jerusalem from Jordan in 1967, and by the early 1970s, Jewish agencies started demanding the families leave the land. The Israeli Supreme Court hearing was postponed on advice from the government amid the ongoing violence in Jerusalem. The issue remains unresolved and potentially inflammable. Jerusalem has been at the center of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. According to the original 1947 UN partition plan, Jerusalem was proposed to be an international city. But in the First Arab-Israel War of 1948, the Israelis captured the western half of the city and Jordan took the eastern part, including the old city that houses Haram al-Sharif, till Israel captured East Jerusalem in the 1967 Six-Day War and annexed it later. Since its annexation, Israel has expanded settlements in East Jerusalem, which is now home for some 2,20,000 Jews. Jews born in East Jerusalem are Israeli citizens, while Palestinians in the city are given conditional residency permits. Palestinians in East Jerusalem, unlike other parts of the occupied West Bank, can, however, apply for Israeli citizenship. Very few Palestinians have done so. Israel sees the whole city as its unified eternal capital, a claim endorsed by Donald Trump when he was the US president, but not recognized by most other countries. The Palestinian leadership across the political spectrum have maintained that they would not accept any compromise formula for the future Palestinian state unless East Jerusalem is its capital.
President Biden's response to this massacre is to mouth the Israeli talking point that Israel has the right to defend itself. Really? The fifth most powerful military on the planet, a nuclear power that has Palestine under military occupation, has the right to defend itself against a people with no military and no control of their land, a separation wall, checkpoints which denies freedom of movement between their own villages on their own land. Israel is not on the defense. They are on the offense, and under international law, Palestinians, as an occupied people, have the right to resist their occupier. It is Palestine that has the right to resist, the right to defend itself. Israel and our media present this war as a struggle between equals. Both are suffering. Both are responsible, and they should sit down and decide together that they will live in peace. End of problem. But this is not a clash of equal powers. Israel is a colonial settler state in a country that is systematically taking and occupying Palestinian lands and homes since 1948 to this very day. This is a military invasion of a country, and under international law, the occupier, Israel, cannot take land from the occupied, Palestine. But the truth of the matter is that Israel and the United States systematically ignore international law when it does not suit their purposes. And yet, President Biden has the gall to say that Israel has the right to defend itself. How do you express your anger, your frustration, your grief, your pain? There are many ways. For some, it's poetry. This week, our friend and colleague in Bethlehem, Abed Abusroor, the director of the Al Rawad Cultural Center in the Aida refugee camp, wrote and recorded the following poem to speak his truth to power.
73 years passed. Did you do your worst yet? Elders did die, yet the younger did not forget. Have you done your worst yet? Occupation, oppression, corruption, spoliation, falsification, theft, massacres, colonization, ethnic cleansing, and terror. Have you done your worst yet? Generation after generation, Nakba after Nakba, accusations of the victims to be terrorists despite all your past and present terrorism. Have you done your worst yet? Aim, shoot, shell, kill, destroy, whatever you do. Had you done your worst yet? Despite the worst you will ever do, you will fail, failure after failure, to uproot us from our own land. Holiness inhabits us. Faith fills our heart. Resilience, resistance, dignity, beauty, and humanity that you will never understand. Do your worst. The challenge is open. Deep are our roots. Strong is our resilience. Never ending is our resistance. Never fading is our hope. Do your worst. We will continue to do our best.
Abed also sent us his thoughts on Nakba Day, at the end of Ramadan, during which the Israeli military attacked unarmed worshippers in their mosque as they prayed.
Dear friends, it's the 15th of May, 2021. Another year of commemoration of our own tragedy, our Nakba. 73 years later, we are still in this continuous Nakba. It is time that this Nakba should end. It is time that all those oppressors should wake up and realize that injustice will not dominate the world, that oppression, occupation, apartheid, ethnic cleansing reach the time to stop. It is time that all those who normalize with the occupation realize that they chose the wrong side of history. It is time that all these European leaders and American government should realize that they are support the oppressor to continue its oppression, and it will end by destroying their own countries sometime soon. Because one, you are with oppression and injustice. Your rule will end soon. So, why do we talk about Nakba? Because it is still ongoing. Because occupation did not end in 1948 or 1967, or the supposed to be peace process in Oslo in 1993. Or these continuous marathons of peace processes and negotiations to create more facts on the ground by this illegal occupation. Whatever you do, Israel, all your injustices and facts on the ground do not erase our rights. Do not erase our resistance. Do not erase our identity, our culture, our humanity, our beauty. Do not erase our memory. I was born in Aida refugee camp in 1963. My father came from a village called Zakaria. My mother comes from a village called Beit Natif. Two villages that you have destroyed with your Zionist bandits in 1948. Two villages among the 534 which were occupied and destroyed by your bandits in 1948. Did you stop there? No, because you have worse to come. And you still master the art of bringing what is worst in humanity. And you continue to create the worst still. Of course, with your supporters who encourage you and continue to support you even against their will to do the worst. So, leaders of this world, what heritage are you leaving for your citizens, for the children of the future generation? What will you say to a child when he or she comes and look you in the face and say, what did you do for justice, for freedom, for equality, for brotherhood, for humanity? How will you be remembered? You don't care? We do care. And that's why we do what we do best. We resist. We don't accept facts on the ground created by the occupation, not because we are bloodthirsty, but because we chose to be just. And we chose to be on the sides of justice and the good side of history, and not to end in the garbage of history, like most of those who normalized with the occupation and oppression, like those who wanted to be politically correct and diplomatic and chose to be hypocrite on the side of history and on the side of oppressors and dictators, and those who continue to do injustice and make this world shameful to live in. Well, we chose the opposite. We remember not because we want to weep on our misery, but because it is our history, and we do not forget, and we do not give up. Giving up despair is a luxury that we did not choose, and we don't want to have. We remember because it is our right to defend what is right for us, what is just for us, what have been stolen from us. We do not forget because we believe we are better human beings when we don't accept injustice and oppression, not only for ourselves, but for everyone in this world. We do not forget because it would be inhuman to forget injustice and oppression anywhere in the world. We seek justice not only for ourselves, but for every human being, regardless of his color or religion or ethnicity or which country or continent they live in or come from. Pure humanity is what makes us human beings. And refusing oppression and injustice is what makes us better human beings. And what makes us continuously better human beings is that we believe that the world will not just change by good intentions. It needs your good actions to change. And that's why you cannot just wait for miracles to happen. You should provoke miracles to happen. And that's what we try to do. We resist because we refuse injustice and oppression. And if it needs to be in the field, to be in the streets, to be boycotting and sanctioning and divesting from this oppressor system, and from all those who support this oppressor system, you should do that. Again, not because you are animated by hate or violence, but because you are animated by justice and humanity. This is not a religious war as they try to present it. This is not people who are hating other people because of their color or their religion, like what is happening in the United States or Europe or wherever. This is a war against oppression and occupation, illegal occupation, and illegal justification of this oppression and occupation. Why should we pay for the crimes of the Nazis? Why should we pay for the crimes of Europe? Why should the British or the French give Palestine to Jews while they have no right in it? While we should just accept these dictations from the international community, why is the UN, United Nations, is not united for Palestine? While this Muslim committee or Jerusalem committee is not united for Jerusalem and not united for the first Qibla for Muslims in Islam. Is Jerusalem just a city without history, without emotion, without links? Is it just any other city? It is not. Those who are bombarded in Gaza are a human being. Those who are killed in the West Bank and Gaza are civilians. If people chose to resist, they resist because there is no other choice. You have left us no other choice. Peace process? Isn't it a joke? Those who still talk about two-state solution, they make me laugh. Where do you see your two-state solution? What did you do to make it happen if you are believers of these two-state solution? Where have you been while Israel is colonizing and colonizing and colonizing and stealing more land and make ridiculous the position of the Palestinian Authority, who has no real authority on anything, and move in the square where you allow them to move? Two-state solution? For getting the right of return for refugees? Accepting facts on the ground? Why didn't you accept the facts on the ground? My French friends, why didn't the French accept the facts on the ground when the Nazi occupation occupied France and they resisted and Mr. de Gaulle ran away to London to resist from there? While all those who resisted are heroes for you, or at least for some of you who were honest citizens and patriots. England, Austria, Poland, Russia, wherever the Nazis passed through. What happened? You opened your doors and come and said, come and occupy us and take what you want and stay however long you want. As long as you want. Why should we be deprived from our right to resist? Here we are, 73 years later, we are on our land, committed to stay and resist by whatever mean we could have. We chose to remain in dignity and present the best of us and present a future for our children based on our rights and values, based on the art and mastering the art of living, mastering the art of life. Do we fear death? Maybe. But every human being will die. What is important how this human being will die. And for what he will die. Do we choose to die? No. We want to live. We want to live for our children. We want our children to live for their country. We want them to grow up and change the world and create miracles without being just a number on a list of martyrs or handicapped for the rest of their lives. We want them to be peace builders, but build peace based on values and respect of human rights and dignity. And not the peace of slaves, and the peace of normalizers, and the peace of accepting facts on the ground created by oppressors and occupiers and colonizers, or the superior powers, or donors who come to Palestine to dictate us what we should do rather than consult with us and help us do what we really need to do. We are fed up of dictations from the international community. We are fed up of intermediations from all these Arab brothers in the countries that they normalized with Israel. We don't need intermediation. What is just, and what is right, and whatever solution should be based on what is just and what is right. Not based on hypocrisy, not based on complicity with this injustice, not based on crocodile tears and throwing some crumbs on the table to intimidate those people who have so much dignity that it will cover the whole world. So I will like to end by thanking all those who walk in the streets, who shared hashtags of Palestine under attack, save Sheikh Jarrah, Jerusalem under attack, save Gaza, Gaza under attack, and so on. Those who demonstrated in the streets, those who wrote to their leaders to be shy, ashamed of what is going on. Those who shouted loudly and clearly, we stand with justice, we stand for Palestine. Artists like Mark Ruffalo and John Kozak and Roger Waters and many others who stood for what is just and what is right. We are deeply grateful for all those who demonstrated, all our brothers and sisters in Jordan and Lebanon and Egypt and everywhere in the world who want to cross the borders and come and unite with Palestine and Palestinian resistance. We stand stead and fast. We stand resilient. We don't forget. We don't give up. Hopefully, you will not give up on us. And you will not forget. However long it will take, you will not give up because it's long. Freedom is not just a word. And again, the world will not just change by good intentions. It does need your actions. And your actions can be shown in such times. May Allah be with you all. Thank you for all of you who stood with us, who stood for justice and freedom and equality and dignity.
Blaming the victim to cover atrocities is not new, but Israel is a master of the technique. According to their narrative, Israel is always the victim. And that narrative works in the United States because we very rarely get the Palestinian point of view. In the mainstream media, you do not hear the Palestinian voice except on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! On Free Speech TV. Occasionally, but rarely, in the corporate media, there is a breakout voice that challenges the Israeli propaganda. I was pleasantly surprised to hear the following commentary on MSNBC by reporter and commentator Ali Velchi.
Now, let's make one thing clear. Israel has a right to exist and to defend itself. That is an indisputable fact. But so do Palestinians. And that's a fact that's often ignored. Palestinians are, at best, third-class citizens in the nation of their birth. The idea that it's even remotely controversial to call what Israel has imposed on Palestinians a form of apartheid is laughable. One look at a current map of Israel, Gaza, and the occupied territories conjures up only one other example: apartheid-era South Africa. The Israeli government, on an ongoing basis, declares parcels of land on which Palestinians live to be either of military or archaeological importance, causing residents to be evicted. Sometimes there's a court case, and almost always the Palestinians lose. Yet months or weeks later, that same important land suddenly becomes home to a brand new Israeli settlement. As more and more Jewish settlers take over land on which Arabs live, the occupied West Bank becomes de facto more Israeli and, in the explicit hopes of the Israeli government, more Jewish. This is a long-standing attempt and a deliberate attempt to force Arabs who have lived in that land, sometimes for hundreds of years, out. It's an attempt to dilute their presence, because to have Arabs as full participants is, in the opinion of the Israeli government and their courts, diluting Israel. Just prior to the pandemic, I toured many of the contested areas and homes from which Arabs are being pushed out, both in Israel proper and in the occupied territories. Palestinians don't control the important parts of their lives. Palestinian families are refused permits to build or renovate their homes. When they connect their homes to the municipal water supply, Israeli soldiers sometimes cut the pipes. When they attempt to harness solar energy because their homes are not on the grid, Israeli soldiers literally come and remove solar panels from their homes. I spent an hour and a half traveling alongside an elderly Palestinian woman who was being transferred between three ambulances from Gaza to the no man's land in between and then into Israel to get cancer treatment. Three ambulances over the course of 1 mile, more than an hour to cross the border. That's how Gazans live. Without medical treatment because Israel prevents it. Without electricity much of the time because Israel prevents it. Without the ability to fish in the Mediterranean Ocean because Israel prevents it. Without an airport or a seaport because Israel prevents it. Like Israelis, Palestinians also have a right to exist and to defend themselves. But there is no one willing to help them do that. Not the Israeli courts, and not the U.S. government. What the U.S. also shares with Israel is the belief that Hamas, the political party that governs Gaza, is a terrorist organization that calls for the destruction of Israel. Hamas is supported by the majority of Palestinians in Gaza. Hamas may not be in the best long-term interests of the Gazans, but peace hasn't really worked out for them. Faced with an Israeli government which pens them into what has been called the world's largest open-air prison, they have chosen a government that most of us wouldn't prefer, one that is not given to negotiation and moderation and respect for its neighbor. Israel needs a new approach to the Palestinians, and America needs a new approach to Israel. After more than seven decades of not just being deprived of land from which they were evicted, Palestinian frustration runs deep. It may be worth going deeper than what you may hear inside your bubble and understanding the depth to which the Palestinian people are subject to apartheid in their own land, deprived of basic necessities, and subject to relentless civil rights violations. This is not a secret. It's out there for you to see. You just have to look for it.
Wow, that is rare. And I sincerely hope that it does not cost Velchi his job. Remember when black activist and university professor Mark Lamont Hill gave a pro-Palestinian speech at the UN and his employer at CNN fired him under the accusation that he is anti-Semitic because of his pro-Palestinian stance? Oh yes, it happens. Ali Velchi is a terrific reporter and commentator, and I sincerely hope he survives at MSNBC. Another bright light in getting out the Palestinian side of this struggle with Israel are the late night comedy shows especially Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, John Oliver, and Trevor Noah. There are several clips that we could play to illustrate this, but I have chosen this thoughtful commentary by Trevor Noah.
Israel versus Palestine. And I know that even saying that sentence means I'm losing followers online and I'm on the verge of being blocked on all social media and in life. That's how contentious this topic is. I mean, before you even finish the sentence, people are like, you idiot, how dare you, shut the hell up. But guys, we have to talk about it. Because this is one of the most difficult stories that has existed in our lifetime. I mean, there are lots of fights that seem like they'll never come to an end. You know, India versus Pakistan, China versus Tibet, white people versus rhythm. But Israel versus Palestine is a 73-year-old beef that has stumped everybody. I mean, when it stumped Jared, you knew that this thing was difficult. But the paradox is that because Israel and Palestine has been ongoing for so long, people forget that it is ongoing. That is until there are flare-ups that the world cannot ignore, which is what happened again this week.
Overnight, a deadly barrage from Israeli forces lighting up the skies over Gaza. And in the West Bank, warning sirens echoing through Bethlehem. Earlier, Palestinian militant groups firing more than 200 rockets into Israel. Most of the Hamas rockets stopped by Israel's missile defense system, or they fell short. Israeli strikes reportedly killing at least 23 people, including 9 children. Israel saying the dead were militants. At least 6 Israelis were reported injured. Tensions have been escalating over Israeli moves to evict Palestinian families from their homes in East Jerusalem. They boiled over as more than 100 worshippers and protesters were injured as Israeli police stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque using tear gas and rubber bullets.
Yes, this week, the conflict escalated again, and now dozens of people are dead, including children. And look, man, what makes Israel-Palestine such a difficult topic to even broach is all the layers that are packed into it. No matter how much you try and break it down, people are always going to say that you're leaving out some crucial piece of context. And you know what the truth is? They're probably right. I mean, there's the history of how Israel became a state after Nazi Germany tried to destroy the Jewish people. But there's also the history of the British taking the land from the Palestinians. Not to mention that every other country in the region has its own issues and its own agendas. And then on top of all of that, there's religion involved. And I don't care what anybody says, man, religion is the one thing that has never calmed any situation when there's a clash. And you know what makes it even harder? Is the fact that who's right and who's wrong always seems to change depending on when you start measuring time. This week was the perfect example of it. If you start from Israel fired rockets into Gaza, well then Israel is the bad guy because they're bombing Gaza. But then you take a step back in time, you go, well, Hamas fired rockets at Israel. Well, then Hamas is the bad guy. But then you take a step back and you go, but the Israeli police, they went in and started beating people up in a mosque during Ramadan, the most holy time in the Muslim calendar. Well, then Israel is the bad guy. But then you go, well, the Palestinians, well, they were throwing rocks. Well, the Israelis, they were kicking people out of their homes. Well, the Intifada, well, Israel keeps taking more and more land. Well, the Arab invasion, and back, and back, and back, and who knows how far. Like, you probably find the first cavemen who hit each other with clubs were probably Israeli and Palestinian. I don't know. And look, I don't want to have that argument. I want to have that argument and the noise that goes back and forth in this thing, because honestly, I don't think that any TV show in 10 minutes is going to come close to solving Israel-Palestine. And 10 minutes isn't even enough time to explain the Mortal Kombat conflict. So I'm not even trying to come in and do that, right? I'm not trying to do that. The part where we say who's good and who's bad and who started, let's step away from that and instead ask a different question. Instead, let's look at who's dead and who's alive this week. In Gaza, Israeli airstrikes have reportedly killed 28 people, including 10 children. Over 150 people have been wounded. In Israel, Hamas rockets have killed 2 people. And this exchange of fire comes after the Israeli assault in and around the Al-Aqsa Mosque that left more than 600 Palestinian protesters, worshippers, and civilians wounded, and a few dozen Israeli police. Now, personally, I'm not saying for you, just personally, I cannot watch that footage and hear those numbers and see a fair fight. Like, set aside motives and intentions and just look at technology, technology alone. Israel has one of the most powerful militaries in the world. They can crush Gaza like that. Not to mention one of the most advanced defense systems in the world. You shoot a rocket at them, it's probably not going to do anything to them because of their defense system. Right? They've got a giant Mutombo in the sky just knocking them down. And I know that this is contentious. And I know that people are going to hate me for this. But I just want to ask an honest question here. If you are in a fight where the other person cannot beat you, how hard should you retaliate when they try to hurt you? Honest question. And I ask this question because I think of it like this. When I was a teenager, I would always get into fights with my little brothers. And little kids can be vicious, right? They're trying to punch you in the leg, trying to punch you in the nuts. They're kids, they do that. But my mom would say to me, whenever I get angry, she'd go, Trevor, don't hit the kid back because they can't hurt you. You're a teenager and the kid is 4. And I was like, yeah, but the kid is hitting me. He could hurt me. But my mom was like, yeah, but you're also so much bigger than the kid. You can crush him in an instant. And please don't get me wrong right now, because I know someone's going to watch this and go like, oh, you're comparing Palestinians to children. No, I'm not doing that. I'm telling a story about myself. Honestly, I am. Because what my mom made me understand is that as a person who has immensely more power, I had to ask myself whether my response to this child was just or necessary. Could I find different ways to deal with this? Whether I felt aggrieved or not, or whether they were fighting fair, was almost irrelevant. Was I even able to ask myself the question about why they were doing what they're doing? Was I willing to admit guilt? This was all part of the question that I had to ask myself. But the main question I ask in this situation is about power. And please, again, I know this is not a great analogy, because I'm not saying Palestinians are children. I'm not just saying they're all children, right? I'm not saying that they're harmless or that they're irrational or acting out. I'm not saying any of that. I'm not. I'm just talking about the difference in power, which is something we do all the time. I mean, think about policing. If a man has a knife, should the cops shoot him? In many parts around the world, like in the UK, they say, well, we're going to do everything we can to try and not shoot the person, even at risk to ourselves, because at the end of the day, they brought a knife to a gunfight. So what's the right response? Well, I mean, everyone has a different answer to the question, and I'm not trying to answer the question, nor do I think I'm smart enough to solve it. All I'm asking is, when you have this much power, what is your responsibility?
We need to know the truth about the war between Israel and Palestine. We need to know the history. We need to get the objective facts on a daily basis. Until then, we must depend on Al Jazeera, our late-night comics, as well as the courageous reporters like Ollie Velci, Mark Lamont Hill, Amy Goodman, Michelle Goldberg, and Michelle Alexander, to name a few. The U.S. is the funder and main prop of the Israeli state. We can stop this massacre, but not until we raise our voices, demand the truth, and we force our government to stop the U.S. support of this apartheid state. That is our job. I want to close with another poem written and read by Abed Abishror, one of the most courageous and prolific voices of the Palestinian people.
I remember, I don't forget. I remember, I don't compromise. I remember. I remember spring and summer, autumn and winter. I remember. I remember the narrative of elder people around the fire. The stories told under the tents, the cries of infants cold and hungry. The bread soaked in tea because there was nothing else to eat. I remember. I remember the ghosts of the present, the ghosts of the past, and the ghost who will come. I remember. I remember the tears of parents who could not protect their children. The tears of children who couldn't hug their parents. The children who grew up into men behind the bars or in exile. I remember. I remember all those erased names of villages, places, traces of life, of culture, of an entity, of an identity. I remember. I remember the first curfew, the first tear gas, the first bullet. I remember the first revolution and the last compromise. I remember the first born and the last killed. I remember the first country and the last pieces. I remember my Palestine. I remember my Palestine. I still remember my Palestine. I still see my Palestine. I remember I was alive. I remember I wasn't a number. I remember I was alive. I remember the day I died.
And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You'll find us here every week at the same time and place on your radio dial. You can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. To access our permanent archive to hear any of our past broadcasts, go to TruthandJusticeRadio.org, all one word, TruthandJusticeRadio.org, and click on This Week in Palestine Archive. This archive was developed and is maintained by our colleague and sound engineer, Stan Robinson. We thank you for your time, and we hope you will join us again next week for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is John Roberts, wishing you a good morning. من مخيم إلى